You may or may not have heard me the first time I said this. You may or may not have received the email that I sent out. I'm setting up this because my Bible always gets in front of my notes, and then I get lost. And so I'm just going to spread it out. Eventually, maybe I'll have it run across the whole thing, and then I won't have to ever turn a page. I got page one here, and then you can know how close I am to being done with the sermon until I'm over here, you know? I just thought of that. Oh, that's brilliant. I should really market that. You call it the long-winded pastor's podium. You can just have one of them that just runs across. I don't know if you received the email that I sent out earlier this week, but I love bicycling, and I bicycle a lot, and I go whenever I can. And I have fallen recently. I mentioned that in my email. I fell again on Friday morning, and this is really weird because I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, getting old, and I lose my balance easier. Or maybe I shouldn't have been bicycling on Friday because the roads were really slippery and icy. That's actually what happened. So I was going up to Bank Square, coming from Highway 27 here, heading to Bank Square, and just as I'm getting, the light's green, and so I'm going to pedal right through. Well, wouldn't you know it, I'm just talking about, there's a cop going the other way. I know, you're already thinking, oh, you're trying, no, I didn't do anything wrong, okay? What happened was, there's a cop sitting there, and as you're coming to Bank Square, it's dark out, because I was going early morning, you couldn't see it, all of a sudden he flips his lights on and his sirens, and so all I see is the reflection coming off of Milgram's Jewelers there, and so I suddenly try to slow down. Well, you can't slow down well on two wheels in the ice, you know? And so basically, I'm sliding all over the place. I managed to hold up for a little while, and I'm hopping on one foot trying to stop before I run in front of this cop car who's going to suddenly try to go, you know? And so I fell down in front of the police officer, but he had his sirens on. He was going, he didn't even stop to see if I was okay. You know, isn't that his job? You know? Must have had something more important going. He probably looking at me like, well, you deserve that. But I talked about, what do we treasure? What are some of the things that you hold dear to your heart? And I'm going to open it up here, and I'm just going to take a couple of them. But one thing I'm going to say before I allow anyone to speak is you can't say children, because we all know that we value our children. But then they disobey, and then it's maybe a little bit less. But, so you can't say children, because obviously it's a given. We deeply treasure and value our children. What greater treasure do we have as parents than our children? Maybe grandparents, you could say grandchildren. But that's done. I already said it, so you can't say that any longer. But what are some things, kids, you're welcome to participate in this as well. What are some things that you treasure, that you hold dear, that are valuable to you? Who's got something?
Children.
Yeah, that whole thing there, Mark. Yeah, never mind. We'll work on listening skills here soon. What do we treasure? Yes, Sequoia. Bible. That's good. Your photos. Yes, absolutely. So if your house was burning down, let's say your children are out of the house, you're going to run back in to save something, you're going to save those precious photos. I can see that. I'm not, because I'm scared of fire. Okay. What else? Take one. Oh, good. Before the children? I'm just curious. Before the photos, right. Because she's still in the house saving the photos. You're going to go in and save her. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Empty nesters, but now your nest is burning. That's a problem. Okay. One more. Anyone? Yes.
Time.
Oh, I didn't know if anyone would say time. Time is treasure. Sometimes we feel like we got nothing when it comes to time. And yeah, we hold on to our time. And if we have free time, oh man, do we treasure that. That's good. So I want to, this was several months ago, my dad was cleaning out his garage. You know how many treasures are in a dirty garage? More than you care to admit. And most of them are garbage. But he was cleaning out his garage. This garage is, you've all had bad garages, I'm sure, at some point. This one was horrendous. You have no, I mean, it's just, it's like, he's got a high ceiling, and it's stacked to the ceiling, and it's like 23 by 25 feet of, wow. Okay. And they're in the process of cleaning it out. Well, in this process, they came across some of my old baseball cards. Okay. I didn't even know I had any baseball cards there anymore, but they came across them. They offered them to my younger brother first, and he said, nope, they're not mine. They offered them to my older brother. He says, nope, they're not mine. They offered them to me. I said, I didn't think they were mine. And they said, well, they definitely aren't the other guys. So I said, fine, I'll take them. So I give them to Isaac, and he looks through them. And in this process of looking through all of these little baseball cards, which are actually remarkably in good shape, because you store them in a garage underneath all this protection, they're remarkably good shape. We came across a 1993 Derek Jeter rookie card, you know, which is, you know, that's not, there's better ones out there. You know, some of like the most valuable a baseball card is, I want to say, a 1914 Babe Ruth which is like $500,000. It's $500,000 for a piece of cardboard. Just keep that in mind. So if you run across that, you might want to hold on to that one. Okay. But it's fascinating when you look at the value that's placed on that little piece of cardboard, but somewhere someone has placed the value on it, and now it's considered, for Isaac, we put it in a case, he's got it in his room. It's one of his treasured possessions, I would say. But we left off this last week as we came together, and here was Israel. If you remember what happened with God, he led them up to the Red Sea. And then he had them stop, and he had them turn around and say, go back a little ways, and you're going to stop right there. And so then they stop, and they camp out there right along. So they got the Red Sea to their back, and here comes Egypt ready to attack them. And they say, wait a minute, we're stuck. Moses, what in the world are you doing here? Why did you lead us away from Egypt just to basically feed us back into the hands of Egypt so that we could be killed? That doesn't make sense. And God laid it out on him. He says, listen to me, okay? I'm going to fight for you. All you have to do is stand still and let me do the work. Let me do the fighting for you. And we saw how God did that, how he hedged them in with this protection, this cloud, and so that Moses raised his staff over the sea, and God parted the waters, and they walk across on dry land. And then the Egyptians follow. And as the Egyptians follow, they're going to attack the Israelites. And this is what we see. And we didn't quite hit this one last week, but we see this in Exodus 14. This is what we covered last week. But we see what God did. He jammed the wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, these were the words of the Egyptians. These are the ones that are following the Israelites. And they see what's going on. The Egyptians said, let's get away. Let's create a distance, if you will, from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt. The Egyptians recognized that the Lord was fighting for the Israelites. Okay, so what we have here developing, there are several theories as to the route that the Israelites took to get out of Egypt. This is one that is a pretty popular take on it. There's several. Some would say that they went down this way and crossed the Red Sea over here. This is what I lean towards a little bit more so, but there's a number of theories. This is what it is believed to have happened, where they came and then they crossed right in this area here. Okay, so that's where they would have been stuck, if you will, right in that area. And the Lord provided a way for them to escape and to come out of that. But you see how they honored, how the Egyptians noticed that God was fighting for them. They got walls of water on both sides. God's got his hand in this. He's fighting for the Israelites. We need to create a separation. We need to get away from them or we will be destroyed. And that's exactly what we saw. And they get across. The Israelites get across. And Moses spreads his staff over the waters again. The waters come crashing in. And then the Israelites start singing songs of joy, calling God their warrior, calling this God the God who fights for them, the God who conquers their enemies. And they're praising God for all that he had done. And so then they cross and they begin to move southward. And what happens, they come to this area, oops, went too quick here. There we go. Come to this area called Marah. And it's fascinating as we look to what happens here in chapter 15. Right at the end of this song. So they've come across on the other side. They're singing these praises to God. And right near the end then, it's basically they're 3 days out. They've gone 3 days. They brought the food with them, remember? The unleavened bread. They brought the dough. So they have something to cook and eat. But they don't have any water. Their only source of water is what they find along the way. And they come to this place in Marah, and there's water available to them. They've gone 3 days without water. Most people, most scientists, whoever, health people will say you can live up to, but not really exceeding, 3 days without water. So at this point, they're thirsty. 3 days they haven't found water. They come to this place called Marah. And they find water there, but there's a problem with the water. The water is bitter. Isaac, this last week, I'm picking on him today. Isaac, this past week, came home hungry on Friday. Hungry. We gave him trail mix. You know trail mix? It's got peanuts and almonds. That's delicious. I think I've said it to some of you. Trail mix is one of my weaknesses. If you give me a bag of trail mix, it will be gone before the day is over. But anyway, so it's got peanuts, almonds, cashews, of course, M&Ms. You know, and then it's got raisins. Isaac doesn't like raisins. He came home on Friday, and his words, I heard him say, I am so hungry, I am even eating the raisins. Okay? That boy was hungry. Okay? But what we have here is we have the people of Israel come down to Marah. They haven't had anything to drink in 3 days, and yet this water is too bitter to drink. There must be something seriously wrong with this water that they're not willing to suffer and drink this water. Maybe it would just make them sick. I don't know what's going on, but this water, if you have been thirsty for 3 days, you'd think, I don't care what that water looks like. You hear some survival stories, I don't want to get too graphic here, of people who have been stuck, and there's no water, they have only one thing to drink. Yep. Anyway, and so we see that you're almost willing to drink anything at that point, and they, yet we find that this water is not okay to drink. And so God has Moses take a piece of wood, and he throws the wood in, and it makes the water sweet. I see a picture here. And what's going to happen after this happens? God speaks to the Israelites. And you're going to catch something here if you look. And this is what he says. It's some of these if-then type statements. So God has just sweetened the water for them. Now they have something to drink. You have a God here who has demonstrated his power over and over and over again. His might, he's a warrior, he's a conqueror. He has totally wiped out Egypt and their army. And now we're going to see God who still is all of that, but we're going to see him on just a little bit of a different level. There's a switch, a transition that happens here. God wants Israel to see him for who he is, and we're going to see another attribute of God here this morning. And so in Exodus 15 it says, he said, if you listen, this is God's words to speak to the Israelites through Moses. If you listen carefully to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the God who heals you. I think this is critical, and God's timing is critical. Basically, what I envision here is what you have is you got the Israelites, you come around this water, they're so thirsty. They need something desperately. They've got water, but it's not good. You can't do anything with it. It's broken water, if you will. And God, through Moses, makes the water drinkable, makes it sweet. And then God lays this out, understand, people, if you will do this, okay, I'm the God who heals you. And he, just as God healed the water, he gives them this picture. Do you guys see what I just did for you? I just healed this water. I'm providing for you. You were so thirsty. You had no idea what was going to happen. I provided this water for you. I healed the water. And likewise, if you will just do as I say, I will bring healing on you as well. So it gives them this word picture, I think, is what we have. At the same time as they're drinking the water, Moses is saying, do you have any idea, this God that you're serving, the healing that he can bring to you just like he brought to this water? I'm getting a little ahead. Let's back up. What's interesting is we look at this journey that the Israelites are about to take now. We sometimes attribute this, it's done, okay? The climax of Exodus has happened. They crossed over the Red Sea. There, now it's all just down story. But the reality of it is, yeah, the Exodus was part of it. But there's this whole book, and all that God is doing is saying, you need to understand who I am. And I'm going to put you in a position so that you continue to understand who I am. You understood who I was in Egypt because of the mighty things that I was able to do, the power that I had over creation, the power that I had over life and over death. You got to see all of that. And now I've brought you into here. That's not the end of your story. Yes, you have freedom now, but now you're going to watch what I do and how I care for you, my people. How I guard you, how I protect you, how I provide for you. And we saw that just a moment ago with the water. I'm convinced that this journey with the Israelites is designed to be a journey of growth. They're heading into the desert. God's not suddenly done with them because he's delivered them. He's just getting started with them and what he's showing them. You know, oftentimes we think of when we choose to come to follow Christ, when we choose this is our faith, there, end of story, we're done. That's just the beginning. And that's just the beginning of the growth times in our life. And that's exactly what I think what we're going to see this parallel with the Israelites this morning, how he will care for them. So in chapter 16, they've gone to Marah. They've gotten the water. It's gotten sweet. The Israelites said to him, then, what's the problem? They don't have enough to eat. They've run out of their food. They have no food. And so what are we going to do? Moses, why did you catch this? This is amazing. If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. The Lord saw all that, or the Israelites saw all that the Lord had done. And now they're dying in the desert because of starvation. Why didn't you just kill us in Egypt? Because then we would at least died with full bellies. Because it says in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. They make it sound like they had it all great, but yet they were in slavery. All the food that we wanted, but you have brought us out into the desert to starve this entire assembly to death. And we still see then what God's going to do. And this is 1 month. 1 month after their deliverance. Okay? Virtually to the day. And the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven. You see how the Israelites, they ran into this little bit of a tough time again. They were thirsty, God gave them water. They're hungry, God's going to give them food. It's raining down bread from heaven. In the evening, and you understand why he's doing this, in the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us? Moses also said, you will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against God. But Moses told Aaron, say to the entire Israelite community, come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling. And while Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you will eat meat. In the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. So get the picture. They've already gotten their water from Marah. The water was bitter. It's been turned sweet. They move on. 1 month after they've left, they're hungry. They've run out of food. And God says, you're going to know that I am God, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to provide you bread in the morning, and I'm going to bring in quail in the evening. And every morning and every evening, you will know that I am God, and you will know that I am the one that's taking care of you. There will be no mistaking it. And then, to even emphasize this picture, God comes down to them in this cloud, and he speaks in a voice that all of the Israelite community can hear to Moses, so that they will know that Moses is who God has assigned as their leader. And he says the words, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And he says it to Moses in front of the Israelites, and they can all hear it because he's in their presence, he's in their image. In other words, he's saying, yeah, I did all this stuff. I brought you out of Egypt. I'm going to take care of you, all right? I'm going to handle this. I know you're hungry, but watch what I do now. And catch this idea, with the manna, there was rules with the manna. The manna would come down, and basically they would collect it, and it would dry, and they would turn it, and they'd make it into this bread. And in the evening then, they'd have quail, but they weren't supposed to take any manna. It's like, you know, you're hungry. You want to make sure that you're going to be provided for the next day. And so some of them would store it up. Oh man, I'm going to save it tomorrow. But if you saved it till tomorrow, it would all turn maggoty and icky, and it's just nastiness. You know, but see what God is doing. He's laying it out before him. I will provide for you, but you got to trust me. It's day after day. You know, this is countercultural. You know what I'm saying? Our culture teaches you from a very young age, all right, this is what you got to do. Boys and girls, you need to be planning for your future. And I understand that, and there's some value to that. I'm not totally discrediting that. You need to save this money. This is going to go to your college. Once you have your college, you're going to get a good job. You need to save for your retirement. Okay? We do it. And again, I'm not saying that if you have retirement saved, you're doing, you know, you're contrary to the will of God. That's not it. But I am saying this. If we start living our lives on our own abilities so that I can be comfortable, we see it in the New Testament. If we start doing that, all right, there it is. I need to, you know, sustain myself. God's going to do something. He's going to slip something away. We're going to find ourselves having to be reliant on him. He wants us, he wanted the Israelites to live and rely on him day by day, and this is the example. I will give you food every day, but you got to trust me. And in other words, take the bread. That's all you need for the day. You got to trust me that come tomorrow, you're going to have some more. It gives new insight when we look at the Lord's Prayer. It says, Lord, give us this day our daily bread. Basically, what Jesus is saying, he's remembering how God had provided for them, the Israelites, okay? Lord, give us what we need for today. That's so countercultural. We want what we want for today, and so that we're also ready for tomorrow. And we oftentimes don't trust the Lord for the day to day. He's placing them in a constant state of dependency. And then I find this is one of my favorite pieces of this. So we move on then, and we're going to get into Exodus 17. So they've been provided for. They've got the food. Well, they find themselves, as they continue to move on in Exodus 17, they're thirsty again. You know? And God has done this. This is what's so unique. God, each time, he does things a little bit differently to show them, I've got you in this situation. I've got you in this situation. You don't have water, or this is bad water. I'll make the water good. You don't have food. I'll give you some food. You want some meat? I'll give you some meat. And now we have a spot where they're very thirsty again, but now there is no source of water. There's nothing to be had. What's God going to make sweet now? We've got nothing. And so God says to Moses, Moses, go up before me. I want everyone to see this. And Moses goes up on the side of the hill with some of the elders, and he says to Moses, Moses, I want you to take your staff. I want you to strike the rock, and I'm going to make water come out, flowing down this mountain, and these Israelites will have something to drink. You know, and this is the statement, is the Lord among us or not? That's the question that is asked to them. You guys, has God not shown us that he is among us? Ask yourselves, is the Lord with me or not? And over and over and over again, we see it with the Israelites, he is. He strikes the staff on the rock, and out comes the water. And again, we see it different each time. You don't have water, I'll give you water. You got bad water, I'll make it good. You don't have food, I'll give you bread, and I'll give you meat. He lays it out over and over again. Shortly after this, there's this attack that happens on the group of Israelites. You know, and they hadn't really been fighting much. They fled from the Egyptians. They pursued him, but God did all the fighting there. Well, again, he changes it up for them. And this time, Moses, who's standing up on the ridge up on the hill above them, they're attacked by the Amalekites. And they're coming in, and as long as Moses, and this is the posturing thing, as long as Moses is holding up his staff and basically acknowledging to all the people so they can see, all the people can see Moses, there he is, submitting himself to the Lord and trusting in the Lord in this capacity, holding up his staff in his arms, and so much so, in fact, they gave him a rock to sit on, okay? So the Aaron and another guy, I'm forgetting his name, they come up and they help him. They're holding up his arms, and they give him a rock to sit on, and so just constantly submitting to the Lord. Lord, this is your battle. This is your, okay? It's all yours. It's all yours. And as long as he kept his arms up, they would win. And when the arms came down, they would find themselves falling behind. But again, God is taking, saying, you're being attacked? I've got it. I got you covered. Okay? You don't have water? I'll get you some water. You don't have food? I'll get you some food. And we see it over and over again, how the Lord provides. And then we get into chapter 19. We're not going to read the whole chapter. I'm just going to go for a few verses. But I want you to listen, particularly when I get to verses 5 and 6, and just grasp what God does and how he sees his people here. We've already seen the care, but he's really going to spell it out now for them. So in chapter 19, Exodus chapter 19, verse 1, so they have moved on. I think I got a map here. Here we go. So they moved on. Here was Marah. That was the bitter water. And they come down here, and they're heading right to Mount Sinai. And they're at the base of the mountains where we pick it up here. And it's been 2 months, almost again to the day of when they have left Egypt. Okay? It says, in the third month, it's the beginning of the third month, after the Israelites left Egypt, on the very day they came to the desert of Sinai, after they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, this is what you are to say to the house of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did in Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings. What's interesting, to be carried on eagle's wings. You know, like when you fly, how much work do you put forth? I remember my first flight was to Detroit, Michigan. It was only like an hour long, maybe even 45 minutes. It was to see Sarah. Over Christmas. We were just dating then. We were soon to be married. She just didn't know it yet. It's really how it turned out. Okay? But that was my first experience flying, but it's just like, wow, that was so effortless. You know, to drive 12 hours or to fly for 45 minutes, it was so effortless. Love flying. I just don't like paying the price tag. But that's what we see here. God says, I carried you on eagle's wings. You had no effort, go forth. This was my work, my doing. And I brought you to myself. Now, and catch this, I got verses here. Now, if, we have some more if then, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, basically God's saying, I got the whole earth, but I'm setting you apart to be something treasured. And you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. It's interesting. It's a fascinating word choice because Israel had just come out of slavery. They just came out of possessionship, if you will, which I'm pretty sure is not a word, but I'm going to push to make it a word, okay? They had just come out of this possessionship. They had been in slavery in Egypt. They had been possessed, if you will. They know what it was like to be owned. And yet here's God using the same word, but in this capacity saying, you are my treasured possession. There's such a difference when you treasure something, and you hold it dear, you take care of it, you love it, you honor it. And this is how God describes his people. His very people. You are my treasured possession. You are my royal priesthood. We'll get into that a little bit next week, this idea of priesthood and the holy nation coming up. But what's interesting, we see this covenant. We have this if-then aspect. This is considered the Mosaic covenant where God makes his promise to his people through Moses. We had the Abrahamic covenant. Remember a few weeks ago, that was non-conditional. God said to Abraham, I'm going to do this no matter what. You got nothing, okay? It's going to happen. Whether you do this or that or the other thing, it's going to happen. I'm going to make it happen. We have this one. This is conditional. As long as the Israelites are going to keep and obey his covenant, then they will stay in good standing. In this capacity. So it's conditional. And then we find what transitions in the New Testament. Jesus bringing in the new covenant. And that again is non-conditional. Turn with me. We're going to wrap it up here soon. But turn with me into 1 Peter. I want you to see this parallel. 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to find Peter is going to lay out very similar language to what we just read here with this idea of you will be my treasured possession. The whole earth is mine. You will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And we're going to see it again. Because sometimes what happens is we believe that, and there's some who look at the Old Testament and say, oh, that was for Israel alone. And to an extent, they're right. There's some parts that are like that. And this was written to the Israelites. So we have to at least assume that this was true for the Israelites. Well, that's not necessarily true for us. However, we're going to look into the New Testament. If things in the New Testament parallel and line up with things in the Old Testament, then we can attribute them to be, wow, there's something here for us. We're going to see an almost identical situation where Peter's going to talk to the believers and lay it out the same way that they are a treasured possession. 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 4. Listen to this language. We'll lay this out for you briefly as we move on. As you come to him, the living stone is Jesus Christ, okay? Rejected by men and chosen by God, and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house. We'll talk about that in a moment. To be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now, to you who believe, this stone is precious. What's interesting is we don't have a real good concept of the cornerstone anymore, but what would happen is, and it's referring to Jesus Christ being the cornerstone, they lay that stone first. He is the living stone. That's the one. We plot that there. And then he refers to any who have chosen to believe in Jesus, we also are like stones. And then what we've done, so you lay this cornerstone, and then you lay, okay, there's another stone. There's another stone. And together, these stones start to form something. But they're all based on the cornerstone where it was laid first. You know, without the cornerstone, the direction of the building could go anywhere. But the cornerstone is what lays out the direction. And so these stones are laid out in such a way that they fit with the cornerstone. And that's what he says. You who believe are like stones that are connected with the cornerstone. And catch what how he goes on here. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become a capstone, and a stone that causes men to stumble, and a rock that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. But listen to this. But you are a chosen people. There it is. A royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare praises to him who called you out of darkness and into this wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are a people of God. Once you had not received mercy, and now you have received mercy. I want you to see. So we have this cornerstone. And when we choose to follow Christ, we get to be a stone in the mix there. The interesting statements that we have here is when it says, you will be my treasured possession. We oftentimes look at that, it's like, yep, I know, I've heard that. I'm one of Jesus' treasured possessions. And that's true. You as an individual, each one of you, if you've chosen to follow Christ, are then grafted in and said, you are one of his treasured possessions. But it's plural. That's a plural use of the word you. And the same thing is true with the New Testament. It's plural. You know what that means is, Israel, as a nation, was his treasured possession. And the church, as a body, is his treasured possession. We are treasured. We are laid next to Christ in this building to be his treasured possession. No one treasures you more than Jesus Christ. No one treasures you more than God himself, who laid you out for the purpose. You know, this is the fascinating thing. When we look at, okay, yeah, I'm a treasured possession. We hear that all the time, but oftentimes I don't think we hold on to it. We don't believe it. You're treasured. I think I said it last week. If I didn't, I meant to. This idea that when Jesus Christ went to the cross, your name kept him there. His church kept him there. You know, he didn't have to stay there. But his love, because he treasured you as an individual so much, kept him there. And likewise, the love that he has for the church, that's what he died for. And it's not just so that you can have eternal life, which is true. You know, I'm convinced that when we choose to follow Christ and we are saved, as we say, it's not just so you can go to heaven. It's not just so that you can find freedom from your sins. I believe that both of those are true. I believe that you do go to heaven. I believe that you do find freedom from your sins. But it's also to proclaim the name of Christ. And that's as an individual, and that's as a church. And that's what we're going to get into next week. That is the purpose. That's why he wants you to be his treasured possession, so that as you are treasured by him, you will treasure others. And then as you treasure others, people will see that and want to be a part of that and understand that he treasures them as well. I want you to understand how treasured you are as an individual. I want you to understand how treasured this church is. And if Jesus Christ treasures something, shouldn't we also treasure it? You know what I'm saying? As Jesus Christ treasures you, shouldn't I also treasure you? As Jesus Christ treasures his church, shouldn't I also treasure this church? You got to ask yourself, where are you finding that? What are you treasuring? And we find in scriptures, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you're treasuring this, well, your heart's going to follow it. If you're treasuring the people, your heart's going to follow that. If you're treasuring the church as a corporate body, your heart's going to follow it. And you'll find yourself giving to it in ways that you never thought. And I'm not just speaking financially. I'm talking about giving of yourself for God's people, giving of yourself for him and his purposes. We are so treasured, you have no idea. Way more than a baseball card. Way more than a 1914 Babe Ruth. Anything that you hold dear. I love pictures. I'm with you. I don't remember who officially said that. But you're treasured more than pictures.